inclusive place that we live in, Ontario.
Every one of us makes mistakes, makes decisions we're not proud of. God loves each one of us, and He offers a way for us to deal with sin and with bad choices.
It's a hybrid film. It's a docufiction that James Franco and I directed together. On the surface, what we're doing is we are reimagining these lost 40 minutes from the 1980 film Cruising that were too X-rated for the MPAA.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. The UN General Assembly elects a homophobic figurehead, Texas Republicans want to repair gay people, and modern gay directors go cruising for that movie's deleted sex scenes. All that and more this week, because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Chris Ann Eastwood.
And I'm Michael LeBeau.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending June 14, 2014. A politician from the notoriously homophobic nation of Uganda was unanimously elected on June 12th to a one-year term as President of the United Nations General Assembly. Sam Kutesa, who will officially take office in September, currently serves as his country's foreign affairs minister. It was the UN Africa Group's turn to have the presidency, and no other candidates were considered when Kutesa was nominated in May of last year, despite his outspoken support for Uganda's infamous anti-homosexuality law. That measure punishes repeat offenders with life in prison, outlaws public advocacy for LGBT rights, and requires citizens to report a suspected homosexual to the police. Kutesa, who's been dogged by corruption charges throughout his decades-old political career, echoed the sentiments of his president, Yoweri Museveni, when he called LGBT people disgusting. The election rules made it all but certain that Kutesa would take office, however, so the consensus among global LGBT advocacy and human rights groups was that opposing his election was pointless. But BuzzFeed noted that the rotating General Assembly presidency is mostly a ceremonial post with very little power to affect the areas of policy where Kutesa's record might cause the most concern.
The foreign affairs minister in the southern African country of Zambia has warned diplomats who visit his country to respect his government's anti-LGBT views. According to AllAfrica.com, Gabriel Namulambe told reporters following a meeting with U.S. State Department officials this week that homosexuality is untraditional to our culture, and we have appealed to our colleagues to respect our stance that as Zambians, we shall remain a Christian nation. Two men are currently being tried in Zambia for homosexuality in a much-delayed show trial. They were forced to undergo anal examinations by government doctors to confirm their homosexual activity. That practice has been universally condemned by human rights groups as torture and by medical groups as quackery. They each face at least 14 years in prison. The men were first arrested in late April 2013, briefly released on bail, and then rearrested a few days later. They've been behind bars ever since. Amnesty International has identified them as prisoners of conscience and called for their immediate and unconditional release. A verdict had been expected on May 30th, but the magistrate instead postponed the case indefinitely because of unspecified delays by the state prosecutor.
17 transgender women were arrested by religious police in Malaysia this week at a wedding ceremony in Bahau, a town about 55 miles southeast of Kuala Lumpur. The women were charged under Malaysia's Sharia-based penal code, which outlaws any male person who, in any public place, wears a woman's attire or poses as a woman. Justice for Sisters, a trans rights group, said all of the women are first-time offenders and that most are professional wedding planners who now worry about their reputations and possible loss of income. Each was fined 1,500 ringgits, about $470, and jailed for 7 days. Failure to pay the fine in 7 days could increase that jail time to 6 months. One of the 17 women, who's under the age of 18, escaped time behind bars but was ordered to receive counseling to cure her condition. The heads of all the detainees were forcibly shaved.
But new legislation in Denmark puts it at the forefront of trans rights in Europe. It's now the first country on the continent to stop forcing people who want to change their gender on legal documents to first get a demeaning clinical diagnosis of gender identity disorder. Under the new law, expected to take effect in September, Danes changing their gender will also no longer have to undergo reassignment surgery and sterilization. A person's simple written statement that he or she wants to change his or her official documents will be processed after a 6-month reflection period. A government spokesperson said that the changes will make life easier and more dignified for the individual.
One chapter of the marriage equality saga in the U.S. state of Wisconsin has now been written. U.S. District Judge Barbara Crabb struck down the state's ban on civil marriage for same-gender couples on June 6th, but unlike similar federal court rulings, she didn't include a stay to prevent lesbian and gay couples from immediately rushing down the aisle. More than 500 same-gender couples have legally wed since then. But late in the day on June 13th, the judge put her ruling on hold while the state challenges it at the federal Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals in Chicago. While ending a week-long window of opportunity for gay and lesbian couples to tie the knot, the judge did say that she would have preferred to let them continue. But she said she felt compelled to stop them because the U.S. Supreme Court and other courts have issued stays under similar circumstances. Republican Attorney General J.B. Van Hollen, who's vowed to vigorously defend the ban in court, threatened county clerks earlier in the week with criminal prosecution for continuing to hand out marriage licenses to lesbian and gay couples and insisted that none of them were valid. The Associated Press counted 555 marriage licenses issued to same-gender couples as of noon on June 12th by 60 of the 72 counties in the state. Like their counterparts in Utah and Michigan, those marriages now remain in legal limbo pending higher court decisions.
LGBT Pride is blooming in the traditional month of June. The estimated 200,000 celebrants who took to the streets of Rome on June 7th called on Italian lawmakers to pass legislation to create civil unions for same-gender couples. Several bills to do that have failed in the Italian parliament over the last two decades. Polls now show majority public support for them, but the all-powerful Roman Catholic Church vociferously opposes any form of legal recognition for lesbian and gay couples. Rome's Mayor Ignazio Marino led the Pride March and promised to create a city-level registry of civil unions as long as lawmakers refuse to act at the national level. "We need to put pressure on Parliament," he said, "so Italy can overcome the shame of lagging behind the rest of the European Union."
Tel Aviv's multi-story municipal building was lit up by rainbow colors during the weeknights leading up to that city's annual Pride celebration on June 13th, while the British Embassy flew the rainbow flag in support. Police officials counted more than 100,000 people in or watching the procession as it wound its way under sunny skies through the city center to a concert and dance party on the beach. The Israeli parliament has repeatedly defeated efforts to introduce civil marriage for both same-gender and heterosexual couples. Only religious authorities can perform marriages in Israel, and neither Jewish, Christian, nor Muslim clergy will marry gay and lesbian couples. But the nation's high court has ruled that the civil marriages of same-gender couples legally performed elsewhere must be recognized in Israel.
About 400 people paraded with pride in Bucharest on June 7th. Bad weather didn't seem to deter the celebration in the Romanian capital. The march passed the Russian embassy, prompting some participants to whistle and boo as they went by. The parade ended at Victory Square, where the crowd was regaled by a rally and concert. Private consensual adult same-gender sex has been legal in Romania since 1996, and sexual orientation-based discrimination was outlawed in 2000. But like their peers in Rome and Tel Aviv, Bucharest Pride participants called for the legal recognition of same-gender couples.
In other news, professional U.S. football's first openly gay player, Michael Sam, has made the cut with the St. Louis Rams. He came out earlier this year at the end of his college career at the University of Missouri. But there were questions about Sam even being drafted as the first out player in the National Football League, let alone making a team's roster. But Sam signed a 4-year contract with the Rams this week that, according to Fox Sports, is worth $2.65 million. The other 10 rookies selected during the draft with Sam also made the cut.
And finally, out lesbian Kathleen Wynne became the premier of the Canadian province of Ontario in January after being selected by the ruling Liberal Party following the resignation of her predecessor. She was elected to the post on June 12th, when her party won a majority of seats in the provincial legislature. Nguyen, whose wife Jane Rounthwaite briefly joined her on stage during her victory speech in downtown Toronto, becomes Canada's first elected out premier, as well as the province's first elected female leader.
Thank you. This is a beautiful, inclusive place that we live in, Ontario. It is a beautiful place. And I want us every single day to treasure that. I want our kids to feel that as they grow up in our schools and understand what a gift it is to live in a place like this where anyone can be the premier. It doesn't matter. Anyone can be the premier.
That was the newly elected out lesbian premier of the Canadian province of Ontario, the Honourable Kathleen Nguyen.
And that's News Wrap for the week ending June 14th, 2014. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written by Greg Gordon, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and produced by Steve Pry.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. I'm Michael LeBeau.
And I'm Chris Ann Eastwood.
On the go? Miss the show? This Way Out can offer you another way out. You can now hear the show on Stitcher, radio on demand. Check out the new Stitcher player at thiswayout.org and download the free app for your iPhone, Android, Nook, or iPad. Listen whenever and wherever, and give our voices a boost by rating and reviewing your favorite international LGBT radio show, This Way Out. An A-list actor and a gay avant-garde filmmaker speculate on missing scenes from the controversial movie Cruising after the latest installment of This Week in Grand Old Party Cluelessness. When Texas Republicans included the right to reparative therapy in their 2014 state party platform on June 7th, it seemed as if U.S. politics had hit a new low. But then Republican Governor Rick Perry, a possible 2016 presidential candidate, struck a wrong note with his own ignorance about homosexuality during a June 11th appearance at San Francisco's Commonwealth Club.
Oops. People make choices in life, and whether or not you feel compelled to follow a particular lifestyle or not, you have the ability to decide not to do that. I may have the genetic coding that I'm inclined to be an alcoholic, but I have the desire not to do that, and I look at the homosexual issue as the same way.
It happens every day, no matter what they say, it's just because you're gay. Homophobia, it happens everywhere, you know it's out of fear, it's just because you're queer. Homophobia.
A state lawmaker apparently marches in lockstep with Texas Governor Rick Perry. CNN's Anderson Cooper took a shot at keeping him honest.
Texas Republicans recently endorsed a therapy that purports to turn gay people straight. It's known as reparative or gay conversion therapy. Keeping him honest, there's really no scientific evidence it works and plenty of reason to believe that it's actually harmful, for particularly for minors. New Jersey and California have banned it for minors, in fact. Well, the Texas GOP has now gone in the opposite direction, adding language supporting it to their party platform. Texas State Representative Brian Hughes voted for that change. I spoke to him earlier.
We heard from people that wanted access to that kind of counseling, that kind of therapy, and so we believe in free speech and free choice. And so it's important that in Texas, if people want that kind of help, they can get it. It's not being forced on anyone. But for folks who want it, it should be available.
Even if the vast majority of medical associations say that actually this form of alleged counseling or alleged therapy is actually can be harmful to kids, do you really think that kids should be subjected to that based on what maybe their parents want?
From what I've read, There's medical literature on both sides of the issue. This is really about choice,
not
about options.
It's really just not accurate to say that, you know, doctors are evenly divided. I mean, I can give you a list. The American Academy of Pediatrics, the American Counseling Association, American Psychiatric Association, the American Psychological Association, the American School Counselor Association, the National Association of School Psychologists, National Association of Social Workers. I mean, they represent 500,000 mental health professionals. They all say this is not a mental disorder and it's not something that needs to be cured.
People testified before the platform committee at our convention, both pro and con, individuals, also professionals, therapists.
You know that it's actually
not. I beg your pardon?
That's actually not true. I know people testified for it in front of the platform, but according to a number of groups, gay groups there, who weren't even allowed to have booths at where the platform was, they weren't allowed to argue against it because of a parliamentary procedure. Debate was closed before they had a chance to voice their opposition to it, and it was immediately put to a vote.
Okay.
You're aware of that, right?
When the platform came to the floor, there were a number of amendments to be offered. I had some on some fiscal matters and other things, and those did not get debated because folks wanted to close debate and go home. But there was plenty of discussion on both sides of this issue.
I want to play a clip of an interview I did last year with a man named Alan Chambers, who was head of a group called Exodus International. You probably know about them. They were the oldest, probably most well-known so-called ex-gay group. He's since apologized for advocating reparative therapy. I just want to play you what he said.
I believe that that causes all sorts of trauma. And I know that there are people who have taken their life because they felt so ashamed of who they are, felt like God couldn't love them as they are. And that's something that will haunt me until the day I die.
Do you now believe that it's possible to change your sexual orientation?
No, I don't.
Well, I have heard of him, and I don't know a lot of details about the situation, but we heard testimony, and we've also read reports from other experts who say it's helpful for some of their patients. I want to take exception to something he said. No one is saying that God doesn't love people as they are. I mean, there's nothing in the platform about that. No one is trying to take that position. Every one of us makes decisions we're not proud of. God loves each one of us, and he offers a way for us to deal with sin and with bad choices.
The fact that you view being gay or you characterize it as a mistake or something that, you know, should be changed really kind of maybe says more about your position than what your words actually say. In fact, up until this year, your platform said homosexuality tears at the fabric of society.
I have voted for that platform in the past. I believe that God has created us to work in a certain way. And when we deviate from that in any area, there are consequences. It doesn't mean he doesn't love us. But if you're asking for my personal opinion, yeah, I don't believe that's God's best for the way we should live. I'm not speaking for the Republican Party. I'm giving you my opinion.
Republican Texas State Representative Brian Hughes expressed his own personal opinion about so-called conversion therapy, which is probably more representative of his party than he lets on, while CNN's Anderson Cooper injected a few facts.
Hi, this is Greg Louganis, and you're listening to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine.
The year was 1980, and LGBT visibility had just begun to slip into the mainstream. After Anita Bryant and before the age of AIDS, a major network television news documentary warned of the influence of gay power on U.S. politics, and a controversial major motion picture featured the underground gay male S&M scene as the dark and stormy night behind a serial killer drama. Director William Friedkin spoke last year about what was left on Cruising's cutting room floor and about another filmmaker's interest in reviving those missing minutes.
I had heard that James Franco was trying to reimagine the 40 minutes or so that I had cut out of Cruising. And he called me. I've never met him. But he got my number and we spoke on the phone. And he said, you know, I'm trying to do a film about the missing 40 minutes of Cruising. I said, yeah, I heard that. And he said, can you give me a clue? I said, yes, it was 40 minutes of what you would call pornography.
So take the germ of William Friedkin's idea, add an avowed heterosexual A-list actor and an openly gay avant-garde director, and our entertainment correspondent, Steve Fried. Relax.
Travis Matthews is an award-winning filmmaker whose movies focus on gay men, intimacy, and sex. His 2012 film, I Want Your Love, was even produced by adult film company Naked Sword, but while sexually graphic, was somehow not gratuitous. The same can also be said of his latest film, which he co-directed with actor James Franco. Interior Leather Bar is both a recreation of explicit sex scenes cut from the controversial 1980 film Cruising and a documentary about its very own making. Wrap your head around that.
My name's Travis Matthews, and I am the co-director of Interior Leather Bar.
And what's it about?
It's a hybrid film. It's a docu-fiction that James Franco and I directed together. On the surface, what we're doing is we are reimagining these lost 40 minutes from the 1980 film Cruising that have a whole mythology to them. Supposedly, they were 40 minutes that were too X-rated for the MPAA, and Friedkin had to shave those 40 minutes off in order to get his R rating. So on the surface, that's what we're doing as kind of a launching pad to making a broader film that weaves in and out of behind-the-scene footage and scenes that are of this reimagined 40 minutes. So there are a lot of things that James and I wanted to provoke or bring up or be part of this film. And one of the things for me that at the core of this movie is what it's really about is around boundaries. Creative boundaries, personal boundaries, sexual boundaries, and then that dovetailing into censorship, which is where the whole idea of the 40 minutes came from to begin with.
Let's get this question out of the way. Why did an Oscar-nominated heterosexual actor produce and co-direct a sexually explicit gay film?
To James's enormous credit, I think he just goes with his creative impulses and doesn't really care about a lot of the ramifications of choices that he makes. And you're right, like, I can't think of any other A-list celebrity who would want to go out on such a limb. So I'm not going to speak for him, but the reason he contacted me about this project was he wanted to collaborate with somebody that was already using sex as a storytelling tool. He was interested in working with somebody who was already in that world and working on a project where sex could be both explored through what we see in the story and then also talked about in the way that it is throughout Interior Leather Bar. And he also wanted to do something that referenced Cruising. So when he first talked to me, it was like we had these two very broad ideas. Like we were going to do something that referenced Cruising, and we were going to do something that played with sex as a storytelling tool, and they were going to be incorporated together. And we were both very familiar with the film. I'd seen it several times. I knew its history. I knew the controversies, and I knew its representation of gay people. So our initial conversations were really us kind of feeling each other out and seeing that we both were on the same page and that we were going to work together well. And then we stepped away from it, and something that we both discovered that neither of us knew anything about were these 40 minutes that I've already mentioned that were cut from the original film. And it just seemed like the perfect sort of entree into jumping off to doing all these other things.
The missing 40 minutes from Cruising, were they as sexually explicit as you depict in Interior Leather Bar?
I haven't seen the 40 minutes, and there's a whole mythology behind the 40 minutes because they're so buried and people haven't really seen them. But supposedly either Friedkin or the studio has the 40 minutes, and I've talked to extras who are on the set of Cruising. And I've also heard from Friedkin at different points throughout the last 35 years of what he shot in that film. And as recently as about a month ago, he's been talking about what was in those 40 minutes. And he just confirmed what I had already known, and I think is really genius on his part, is he wanted to have a film that really pushed the edge of what an R rating would be. And he knew if he delivered a film to them that was what he thought they would accept, that they would still shave things off of it, and he would have like a soft R or something that was maybe even PG. So he first gave them something that he knew was filled with sex and graphic, like nudity and just like explicitness, and he knew it was going to be shaved and shaved and shaved and shaved. And so then at the end of the day, he was still going to have something that was a hard R. Now, you know, of the extras that I've talked to who are in particular in the bar scenes, they've confirmed other stories that I've heard about how Friedkin approached it like a docufiction, at least those scenes in the bar that weren't involving Pacino or the story necessarily. They were in real venues, real leather bars, with real patrons, and he really encouraged everybody to do whatever they would normally do. Drink, smoke, dance, have sex, whatever they would normally do in that space. So my understanding is a lot of what's in those 40 minutes is from footage that was taken from these bar scenes.
In making this film, what was your biggest surprise?
One of the things that is maybe not the most surprising, but the most amusing for me, which I think is a fun little story to share, is I knew I was going to need to take a chunk out of the year to edit this. And I also have learned that when I go home to Ohio to visit my family, it's smart to bring a project with me, something to work on, so I'm not going crazy while I'm there. And so I edited that whole film in my boyhood bedroom. It was very much like going back to a high school where I'd have the door shut. I'd be in there for like 14 hours at a time. My mom would just be knocking on the door and being like, I don't want to bug you, but I got that turkey that you really like, and I got some, there's some chips out there, just so you know. So she was like very much like we went into these like very familiar patterns where I'd be like, Mom, I know, I'm okay. But my mom was actually one of the very first people to see different cuts of Interior Leather Bar. Nothing graphic, but a lot of other sort of sections of it. She watched and gave me good notes, actually.
What do you want the audience to take away from the film?
For me, the movie is about boundaries, and it's about censorship, and it's about the ways in which we often draw arbitrary boundaries in these different arenas. And it's a polarizing film, and we knew that from the beginning, that there were going to be different camps of people that were going to feel really strongly about it. And the thing that I really like that's happened, which is what I want people to do, and I think every filmmaker wants this to some lesser or greater extent, is for people to talk about the things that get provoked in the movie and the things that are agitated in the movie. And there's been no shortage of that, whether you love the film or you don't. And I love it. I mean, I love that. You know what I mean? Like, it's exciting to me. Like, the worst thing for me would be to make a film that was just received really tepidly that nobody really cared to even talk about.
This has been a conversation with Travis Matthews, co-director with James Franco, of the controversial docudrama Interior Leather Bar. Find more information online at interiorleatherbar.com. I'm Steve Pry.
Thanks for tuning into This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. This week, Chris Ann Eastwood, Michael LeBeau, and Steve Pride contributed program material. The Lemon Pipers, Romanofsky and Phillips, Tyo Cruz, and Sylvester performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Yavanna Foundation, a bequest from the estate of Christopher David Trentum, and our generous listeners for making this program possible. Log on to thiswayout.org to find NewsWrap transcripts, subscription information, social media links, and our brand new Stitcher Radio On Demand player. Follow TWO Radio on Twitter, email TWORadio@AOL.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on 2BBB Bellingen, New South Wales, WMBR Cambridge, Massachusetts, KUOI Moscow, Idaho, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. We're all going to stay tuned.